Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the beloved Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Dan Foster of National Review Online, filling in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Dan, we talked about this a little bit yesterday because Eric Holder's testimony was just starting, but it was a day of testimony that, let's just say, was probably not very much enjoyed by the current occupants of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, because some of their most darling political figures did not have a very good day. Let's start with Eric Holder. First of all, in questioning from Texas Congressman Ted Poe, he basically had to admit that, yes, more people will die because of how we completely botched Fast and Furious.
Done inappropriately and has had tragic consequences and is going, as I said in my opening statement, it's going to continue to have tragic consequences.
More people are going to die, probably.
That, unfortunately, is not good news for anyone, but the White House doesn't really like to hear their attorney general admitting that. Then, of course, came the issue of the recent clarification from the Justice Department that previous information it had sent about this was inaccurate. And so here's Holder trying to respond to questions from Wisconsin Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner about why folks lied at the Justice Department.
Nobody in the Justice Department has lied.
Why was the letter withdrawn?
The letter was withdrawn because there's information in there that was inaccurate. The Justice Department letter of February.
Okay, well, tell me what's the difference between lying and misleading Congress in this context.
If you want to have this legal conversation, it all has to do with your state of mind and whether or not you had the requisite intent to come up with something that can be considered perjury or a lie.
Actually, I'm pretty sure Congressman Sensenbrenner did want to have that legal argument, and you can tell that Holder was a member of the Clinton administration with that answer about the definition of what a lie is. It kind of reminds you of what is. And finally, here's John Corzine testifying before a number of committees yesterday about his inside knowledge about what happened to $1.2 billion of investor dollars at MF Global.
I simply do not know where the money is or why the accounts have not been reconciled to date.
And that wouldn't be such a big issue since he's not in the administration and he's not in office anymore. But Joe Biden, back in 2009, said that John Corzine, literally, the first guy I called when trying to figure out how to deal with this economy. So have a nice Friday, White House.
This was a big, big day on the Hill for testimony, and I was switching back and forth between my live streams with a big bucket of popcorn on my laptop. People forget, John Corzine, by all accounts, by a lot of insider accounts, was on the very short list to replace Tim Geithner, Secretary of the Treasury. I simply do not know where the money is. That would, I guess that makes sense in the current context. That was a bad show for him. And I also enjoyed how he basically said during his testimony, I haven't had enough time to prepare. And he said more or less, so the testimony I'm giving might not be entirely factual because I haven't had the requisite time to prepare. So I'm really just doing this as a favor to you. But I might come back, I might learn some things down the road that will make the things I said today false. So I like that. And Holder had a really bad day, too. Daryl Issa, he's one of those guys you think, boy, I'm glad that guy's on our side, because I get the feeling that he wakes up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat thinking that he hasn't thought of enough ways to embarrass Eric Holder yet. And he, goes downstairs and he puts on a fresh pot of coffee. And he thinks up another couple more questions. There were some fireworks at the end. I was hoping you'd have the audio. Maybe we'll save it for a slow day, where Issa compares Holder to Mitchell, the Nixon attorney general. And Holder actually breaks out the old, have you no decency, sir? And Issa shoots back, have you no decency? It was some great fireworks there at the end.
Yeah, trying to compare Daryl Issa to Joe McCarthy is kind of pathetic on the part of Eric Holder. And you got to think that the longer this just twists in the wind, that he could be a political casualty as the president tries to dig out from about 40% approval ratings around the country. So we'll see if...
Oh, he will certainly not serve beyond this term one way or another. The question is he going to survive through 2012? And I think it's a very open question.
But the ridiculous rhetoric was not just limited to the president's friends on Capitol Hill. Mr. Obama had some of that himself as he held an impromptu press conference at the White House to express his indignation that the Senate Republicans would not move forward on the nomination of Richard Cordray to head up the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Republicans say this just another czar. This needs to be reformed. So they don't want anybody there. They don't have anything particularly against Cordray, it seems. They just don't want the organization to function in the way it currently is because they think it's just another massive bureaucracy. Anyway, eventually the questioning got to payroll taxes and extending unemployment benefits. And finally, the president decided to take on the Republican contention that, hey, approving the Keystone Pipeline from Canada would be a really good idea and easily create tens of thousands of jobs. But the president wants no part of that, of course, and here's why.
The suggestion right now is that somehow, this Keystone issue will create jobs. That's being determined by the State Department right now, and there is a process. But here's what I know. However many jobs might be generated by a Keystone Pipeline, they're going to be a lot fewer than by extending the payroll tax cut and extending unemployment insurance.
Dan, this is frightening on a number of fronts, but I think the most fundamentally bizarre part of this is the president actually thinks that government cutting checks to people is better in the long run than actually creating well-paying jobs with good benefits and people who will be contributing long-term to the economy rather than these little political gimmicks that are designed to get him through Election Day next year.
Yeah, he said it out loud. Sometimes you're just amazed when people put it all out there for you. But if that's what the President of the United States believes, we're in big trouble. The analogy is that if you break your leg, if you have a really bad compound fracture, and certainly the leg of this economy in my torture analogy is broken, what the president is saying is that it's better off if we keep giving you painkillers and opiates than if we set the leg and get you going on rehab. I mean, government transfer checks are painkillers. I mean, we're enough into the weeds in this Keynesianism that we understand that. And certainly, if you cut people checks, unemployment checks for more than 99 weeks, yeah, they're going to go buy some TVs and they're going to go to the movies and they're going to go out to eat, you know, with their families. And that is, you know, does have a stimulative effect on the economy. But it's like old Milton, you know, Friedman said, there's no such thing as a free lunch, and all that money comes from somewhere. All that is missed economic output somewhere else. And the fact, you know, that this president thinks it's better that we just keep cutting checks to people instead of giving them something to do that's worthwhile and independently economically valuable. And let's not forget, this is a quote-unquote shovel-ready project. This is a project that reduces our foreign energy independence, reduce our foreign energy dependence. These are all priorities of the Obama administration. And the decision to not go forward with it was purely political. So he's got really no ground to stand on here, and I think he knows it.
And hopefully, whether it's Romney, Gingrich, or somebody else, that this is a major issue because this is such a no-brainer. Based on what we're hearing, this would pass easily in both the House and Senate. And the idea that the president needs more time on this is also laughable. He's had an immense amount of time here, and he's just delayed it so he doesn't have to allow it to be a political issue. If he approved it, it'd probably be a huge benefit to him next year. So it's just a mystery as to why he can't even take this victory that's lying right in his lap, but just instead he wants us to swat it away. But on to martini number three now, and the crazy martini of the day. Rick Larson is a Democratic congressman from Washington, and let's just say he's hiring right now because he's had to fire a couple of people in his office for the tweets that they've done. Basically, some of them have referred to him as an idiot, and others have described how they are drinking on the job. One tweet says, quote, "My coworker just took a shot of Jack crouching behind my desk." Later, the staffer tweeted that he couldn't pass a field sobriety test right now. You've got other staffers pointing out on their very public blogs that they're really not interested in doing much work, so she was looking up baking recipes and other things. And so those who are drinking on the job have been fired, and I don't know what the rule of thumb is here. I know at National Review you guys probably tend to mock your bosses on the Instant Messenger or, you know, GChat or something, not somewhere so public.
Decorum. Yes, there's decorum and discretion here. And we have a strict policy of not cracking open alcohol until afternoon. I was trying to think of which joke to go with here. Was I going to say, well, do you blame anybody who works for a Democrat in Congress right now from drinking on the job? Or I was going to say, well, that explains, you know, the last 950 days of Democratic congressional activity. They've just all been drunk. That's why there hasn't been a budget. That's why there's been no serious deficit reduction. The broader cultural lesson here is that for some weird reason, and it befalls all of us. I mean, I'm even guilty of it. Certainly nothing as incriminating as this, but it befalls all of us of this generation that we forget we're so tied into social media, Twitter, Facebook. We forget who the audience is. We forget that this stuff gets out. And in this case, these people are public servants, more or less. They work for public servants. And it was a local blog out in Washington State that caught the tweets and blew it up. And within a few hours, they were fired. It's the same, you know, principle at work with people talking about their rashes on cell phones on public buses and walking down the sidewalk. We've forgotten all sense of a private space and a public space and all sense of what we should and shouldn't be saying. Nobody can say that these guys didn't have it coming. They put it all out there.
I think that's obviously right. It's a pretty easy call by the congressman. What I'm looking forward to, and I wish there was footage of this, is their interview with the next congressman they'd like to work for and have to answer the question, so why did you decide to leave your previous job?
And, they could go work for the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms department.
Yes, by personal experience, they know exactly what damage alcohol can do, especially when you talk about it in front of the entire world.
Right.
Dan, thanks so much for filling in for Jim. Have a great weekend.
You too, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim will be back on Monday. Please join us then for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.